Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
I didn't want you to have to make this choice.
30 men.
Plus Krieger.
For the greater good.
Call it what you will.
Let's call it war.
Hello and welcome to the Star Wars TV cast, broadcasting across the galaxy. This is episode 40. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm James. And this episode, we're covering Andor, season 1. Episode 11, Daughter of Ferrix.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Yes, a small tear. Another satisfying episode, great drama and intrigue and some very Star Wars action. James, what did you think?
Wow, I'm wrong again, aren't I? Wrong again. I'm like, I'm just wrong. I don't know. I really want to see more of Marva. Wallop.
I know.
Anyway.
And that was just like an out of nowhere.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. But so, I got it wrong on another thing because I thought we were going all guns blazing after last week. I thought we were straight into the Spellhouse power attack. But no, wrong again. We're back to a slow burn. But
yes, a nice little setup episode. Yeah,
but it does end us, I think, it gets us ready for a double-fronted finale next week with Ferris and Spellhouse.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I think they're all just setting up the pieces, basically.
Yeah. Like it'll come together nicely, you know. And, and very moving episode this week, I thought, as well. So, yes. And you?
Yeah, I really liked it. I mean, I just thought it was another great episode of Andor. And, now we know the rhythm of the series. It's like the first half of a movie and, some action thrown in, some nice little intrigue, some questions raised, and everyone is on their way to Ferrix, it seems.
Yeah. It's like a tractor beam. Everyone is being pulled now, which is good, and it's done well. It's not like a clumsy sort of like plot line. Yeah, I'm excited for next week and sad really in a way. I mean, not that I'll be, I'll get my Friday nights back, Jonathan.
So. Yeah, but I've loved this week to week thing, and it's been a nice long journey, and I hope all the listeners have been enjoying it as well. And it's been great to get such high quality Star Wars. We've been waiting for ages for something like this, I feel, and it's finally here. The only criticism I hear online is the pacing. Again, there's no questions about the casting or complaints. It's not Star Wars enough. Well, there are some. It's not Star Wars enough, but you're always going to get some haters. But it wasn't. It wasn't that kind of, I hate this episode, these are the major plot holes, what's this person doing here, you would never do that in Star Wars. The criticisms that might be is it's not Star Wars enough and it's a bit slow.
But if you
like a mature drama in the Star Wars universe, I couldn't ask for more, really.
No, I agree. It's doing everything that we hoped it would do, actually, and it's from the very first scene, like where it painted the sort of the dark, sort of like moody picture, it hasn't deviated, and it's delivered on every front. So, I think everyone going into
this. Yeah, remember that first opening scene of Andor walking in the rain, in the dark, with all the fluorescent lights along that
bridge? You mean Harrison Ford, was it? I thought it was Harrison Ford. I was all confused. I was all confused those first 15 minutes, and I was happily confused. But no, I mean, yeah, it says what it does on the tin. It's a dark, slow-rolling movie.
Go on, sorry.
No, I mean... Well,
it is a dark, slow-rolling thing, but yeah. When you said to me it does what it says on the tin, well, the tin says Andor, and it doesn't really... Now that we're at episode 11, I think maybe they should have called it The Birth of the Rebellion or something, because as much as Andor is the main character, he hasn't really been the focused or even the best character, I think. I think, Mothma and Luthen... A bit more interesting, and he's been the framework of the series. But I wonder if there's too much focus put on him by calling the series Andor.
I mean, maybe. I mean, we'll see what happens season two. Really, I mean,
that's true.
At the end of the day, I guess you call it that because he's a key character from Rogue One, and
yeah.
We know he has a dark. We know he has a dark story from there, and so it's telling that story and how we get there. Mm. And to be fair, everyone else along the line dies anyway, so it's like there's no point calling it Luthen, is it? Because I'm pretty. Yeah, I want to put money on this as well, and I'm sure.
Well, no, Luthen's my least favorite character, James. I hate him. Yeah, I can't stand him.
He's an absolute prick, and I really hope he dies in the finale next week. They are. Gil will take that.
He's safe.
See what you do with that. anyway, we're going off track. But yeah, we're still happy with it. We're still happy with the show. We will continue. Yeah.
Well, all will be revealed next week, and I can't wait for the finale. But I'm dreading it as well.
I think there's gonna be a few caskets next week. We'll see. Floating caskets.
Yeah, but we don't like Luthen. Just so you know, we don't like him at all. Yeah. But speaking of Luthen, let's do our Star Wars question of the week. What would you like to see in Luthen's store?
I went round and round. I want this, I want that.
Mm.
And I've just been fascinated with two tubes, from this show.
Yeah.
Benthic and that sniper rifle. So I want that sniper rifle.
The cycler rifle, yeah.
It's just look at it. It's a classic Star Wars piece. It looks like it's been cobbled together from seven different weapons. It's probably been used for decades by different, people. And it looked really good in my office. What about you?
Hanging on the wall. Listen, on the cycler rifle, that was one of the things I wanted to bring up because Mando has it in The Mandalorian. Boba Fett had it. The Tusken Raiders used it in A New Hope. And it's one of the classic weapons of Star Wars. And from Wikipedia, James, it says cycler rifles were crude yet reliable rifles designed to fire solid projectiles. They could hit targets at extreme ranges and penetrate energy shields.
See, that's why I like it. It's because it's not a pew-pew, it's not a laser. It's a clunky old projectile. It's a piece of lead coming at you.
Yeah, exactly.
Gone old school.
Exactly. Mm. But, it's one of my favourite Star Wars weapons. That's very good. I like it. I had kind of a serious one and another one. So the first one would be Jango Fett's helmet that Mace Windu... It lopped off and his head suddenly disappeared for some reason. Because I was thinking when Boba picked up the helmet, I was hoping the head's just not going to fall out.
I wonder where the head
went. But it was empty.
Well, at least you didn't say you wanted his head. Exactly. Head.
But the other one I would want is a Han Solo's dice. That was hung off so I could just take it and throw it into the ocean, never to be seen again.
Toss it over your shoulder.
Ryan Johnson.
No.
It was JJ, wasn't it, that brought those in?
Yeah. I was looking at different helmets. I was looking at some of the Mandalorian, like the other Mandalorians and stuff, and I went down a rabbit hole, and then I realized that I was suddenly on some sites where I was actually almost adding to cart replicas of everything. I'm like, oh fuck, fucking, I'm up to about $5,000 in helmets. I mean, as you know,
finger hovers over buy button.
I do have one Stormtrooper helmet sitting here, and I've been very close to purchasing another, so I had to back off and just look at concept art of rifles instead to save money.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still very close to pulling the trigger on an E11 one day.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, but we had some more great feedback, and let's do it three at a time again. James.
Ah, Jason weighs in again, our leader. I feel like any relics from Alderaan, they're about to become a lot more valuable. Yes. A shrewd businessman is our Jason.
Exactly.
And then Andy Cordsmeyer says the Gaffy stick. Yeah, I was very close to the Gaffy stick as well. That's a great sort of weapon and stuff. It's very good. And then I love this one, Steve Barr. You're a witty man, Steve. All the stuff Claire snaps in half in annoyance when listening to Luthen justify another ship upgrade.
Steve, like, I'm not sure whether Steve is on board with Luthen at all, or has a very soft
Steve's
spot
just,
for
just
Claire.
A
I think
cynical, bitter, but very funny person. So thank you, Steve, for all your input.
Yeah. Megan Dively Layman, the winning Powerball ticket, but it pays in credits. Yes, you know you're in Star Wars when you're dealing in credits. Todd Clegg, Darth Maul's bottom half. Dave Mason, a tribble. Yes, thank you. I actually love how they take little things from other genres, you know, and put them up on the shelves, like the ones from Indiana Jones.
Is there a tribble?
No, there's not. But I think, for those who don't know, the tribbles were the little furry creatures from original Star Trek that reproduced and took over the ship, the Enterprise. Yeah. John Bucket. Oh no, your turn. Yep.
And John ahead. Bucket, the droids I'm looking for. Very clever, John. Very good. Adam Buckley, the crystal skull. Hey, it was an alien skull after all. Right? Yeah, I mean that probably is in there, isn't
that's
it?
That's a good one.
The whips there. That's probably there as well.
Yeah.
Gary J. Hewitt, a jar of sand. I pay good money to defend myself from Darth Vader. Very good.
I'm sure it would be a slight annoyance. I'm not sure how effective that would be in a lightsaber battle.
It's got to be some special sand to sort of seize up Vader instantly, isn't it? I'm sure he's got a force power where he just expels it from his suit. Anyway,
yeah, exactly.
So I'd love to see you try that, Gary. So,
like he clenches a fist and desands himself.
All too easy. So, yes.
Penny Lennox, this necklace, and she put up a photo of Leia at the medal ceremony in A New Hope wearing a necklace made of those small silver square pieces, which was a beautiful little piece, Penny, well done. And Howard the Duck in a cage, which is hilarious. And Penny's suffering from COVID, so shout out to you, darling, and I hope you feel better soon. And my favourite from Ben Stone, a stuffed Ewok.
Oh,
I think that's
man.
Great.
Was it a child Ewok as well? I bet it was, Ben.
Yeah.
Oh, the little ones. Oh, the youngling Ewoks.
They're a little aggressive, those things, though. They're very stabby in the beginning.
Yeah, they were, weren't they? Just like, you know, they're teddy bears. No, they were nasty little things. Nasty little things. Unless you're watching Caravan of Courage. But if you're watching Caravan of Courage, you can sort of tune out now, please. Just bug off.
Well, we hope you're enjoying our Planet by Planet coverage, and we're going to continue with that. I feel like it's like the opening of Game of Thrones that lets you know where you are and where everything is happening. And so this week we'll start off on Narkima and head over to Ferrix, Coruscant with Moff Mavel and then Cyril, and then off to Ser Gromano with Saw and Luthen, and finally to Niarmos. So stay tuned for that.
All right, there you are. That was Jonathan, your tour guide for the evening. Thank you, Jonathan. I can just hear you doing it. And the next stop will be Narkina 5.
But remember how great it was in one of the earlier episodes when Luthen gets on the shuttle bus, the space shuttle bus.
Yeah, Ferrix, he comes in from port or whatever. And exactly.
Yeah. Just parks in the desert, has to trudge over to the shuttle bus. Yeah. Okay.
The next stop will be... Okay, all right then. Let's jump in our starship and head over to Narkina 5 and get on with our review of Episode 11, Daughter of Ferrix.
So here we are at episode 11. Only one more to go. I can't believe it. What a ride. This episode is Daughter of Ferrix, directed by Benjamin Caron, written by Tony Gilroy, created by Tony Gilroy, and let us not forget, based on Star Wars by George Lucas.
Oh, yeah.
And so, thank the maker.
Thank the maker. This oil bath is going to feel so good.
So, Cassian's on the run. Marva is gone too soon. Luthen lets loose. Cyril robs his mum. The Empire tightens its grip and the table is set. And so another super satisfying episode, I think, and we open on Narkeena 5 with Cassian and Melshi clinging to a cliff as the Empire searches for SKPs. And I'm really glad they didn't just jump over getting off the planet.
Well, as we predicted, we know who's running the show and everything, so we knew that wasn't going to be the case, was it? So
that's true.
I love this scene. This is brilliant. I love the way they're scrambling around in the sort of the ashen sand in a, you know, the beautiful white outfits are no longer beautiful and white, and scrambling around. And I just, the native Narkeenians, as we call them, like, how amazing are they? I mean,
it was so good, wasn't it? I just sort of sitting there grinning from ear to ear.
Ultimate Star Wars. I mean, I can just see them coming to life from, like, you know, a concept art book. They're amazing. And do you not agree though? Like feudal Japanese.
Yes, like, exactly right. Big,
but like, you know, he's got the metal plate on his top.
Yeah, on his pate. Yeah.
Yeah. What's it called? 3D. And then, he's almost looks like he's got a top knot at the back. And I thought it was so good. Everything about
that. And I paused on one, and they do have those, I can't remember what they're called, the wooden shoes with the thong, like the flip flop like straps on them. And they're wearing those. So, 100% just a reference to peasants from feudal Japan, it's for sure.
The other guy's helmet, like his sort of helmet piece, was a little bit like that as well. But I just love the mix of just the cyborgness of them, you know, like the eyes in one of them, and then the big metal fist, and then the other hand's like has a handy fish chopping knife for them.
And that's how you do it. Like they look like they were actually attached to these guys, rather not stuck on with double sided sticky tape they did in Book of Boba Fett with the with the moped mods.
Don't.
It looked like they're kind of the things are about to fall off them half the time.
Yeah, I mean, sure they did. I'm sure there was an awful lot of takes where they had to do that. but these guys, it looks like it almost looks like it's so well done. The prosthetics sort of team on this is amazing, because it looks like the flesh is almost growing over the metal in places.
That's
It's like these guys have put on weight, and it's like just that little bit of middle-aged paunch coming over their cybernetics and stuff.
Which is surprising, because all their squigglies have gone.
Oh, the language as well, and the way they talk. It's like a cuter sort of version of Jabba. It's good. I like it.
That's true.
But, it's the...
But it kind of reminded me of Bilbo meeting the trolls in The Hobbit, like The Hobbits, where they had that kind of funny language they had for themselves and calling them squigglies, and he's like, when he kept saying "Heya," and the kind of cute language they had, I thought was very cool.
Yeah, you know, when Melshi decides they can make a run for it and take the ship down, and the two of them.
Oh, that was some fine Tom Cruise running across.
Yeah, it was actually right. Platform. Yeah, yeah, it was the arms like pistons and just going at full pace, and they just going. And then,
Cassian's trying to keep up. He's like, "Whoa, okay, we're off."
cheat! You started early, but I just love that the Narkeenians just look at them bemused, and then just the classic sort of rubbery catch net that just go,
it just hit them like a linebacker, and knock them 90 degrees.
Yeah, and then just all of a sudden they're just in some slime trap. stuck to the floor.
And the Narkinians were laughing. They're just like going,
idiots.
Yeah, exactly. And
then they start to fuck with them, which I thought that was really good.
And
I think we can get 1,000 credits for these.
1,000 credits each we can, like 3D. And he's like, whoa, dead or alive. And it's like, you know, it's that, the classic line. But I love the conversation, you know, again in the cutesy language, killed the water, they did, the Empire. And then when, you know, Andor was like, it wasn't, we're not with them, we're not, it was the Empire. Was like, always the Empire, always the Empire. Like, you guys are always blaming the Empire. Interesting again to see, we've had this a million times now as well, but just the way it points out the way the Empire does not care for locals and their planet and their environment and their food and this is how you start
a rebellion. Environmental oversight.
No, but this is how you start a rebellion. It's like, you know, you've killed the water. Like, you've killed these people have had enough. It's and hence they are, you know. And then we get the classic line: "Scob the Empire."
Yeah, so, I love that one. He's like, "I care not a snot who they killed here."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The language that came up was brilliant. Mm. But I loved the quad jumper, which was great. Which is obviously just refers to the four engines, but it was basically just a cockpit.
Well, that's
four engines strapped.
That's why I loved it. It reminded me of, like, you remember some of the really sort of makeshift pod racer designs. Some of them, which were literally just huge engines, and then and you're just literally sitting on top of, like, you know, a rocket fuel, and just the way it
and then the cowboy in Book of Boba Fett, actually, he was the first sheriff. Was it in the Mandalorian? No, it was in Mandalorian. The first sheriff when they were riding on speeder bikes, and he was just sitting on a pod racing engine.
Oh yeah, he was. Nice.
Which I thought was very cool. That's another nice design point. But I did a little research on on the Narkinans, and they were called the Dewey Pamular and Freedy Pamular, and so I think they're brothers or cousins or something. And Matt Lyons played one of them, and he was one set of arms for the forearm doctor. Liam Cook, who played Ochi, who was one of the Sith assassins in Rise of Skywalker, he played Freedy. And Aiden Cook, who I assume is Liam's brother, he played Two Tubes and was also the other set of arms with the forearm doctor. So all these guys are all the puppeteers that they've been using
for
Andor, and a few other things. So I thought that was kind of interesting as I'm watching the credits.
Deep diving, Jonathan, as he does.
But yeah, so but then they say, "Oh, where would you? You know, where do you want to go?" And he's like, "Niamos." And they can't believe their luck. Right? Great.
I mean, and I'm just surprised when he gets there that, you know, he doesn't kill anyone, doesn't get his quota up, does he?
We'll get back to the armor later. But yes,
sorry, Steve.
The record is not complete yet. Yeah. They jump into the quad jumper and basically they're off. And but I always love to see a spaceship fly through anything, atmosphere or space. It always puts a smile on my face.
Or just like that one, just tumbling just off the water. It's brilliant how it almost doesn't quite make it.
Struggling to get up, yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
But that was a very cool scene, and loved to have some aliens in there, and the design was fantastic, I thought.
Yeah, it was perfectly done. It was great. And it's nice, again, to sort of show a displaced population by the Empire as well. Because you'd require, I mean, we were sort of like, how are they going to get off planet? And it's like, of course, this planet actually did have people.
I'm surprised it had a population, though, because it looked pretty desolate.
Well, but I mean, how much has the Empire done to this? For all you know, they may have scorched all those trees and farmed all of that before. You know, and these,
that's true.
And they're fishermen, so like, and there are lakes, as we, you know.
Yeah, I know, you're right.
Yeah, so,
Killed our water then, here.
What?
Not much squiggly now. Not much left.
The squigglies are all gone.
But our squigglies, aren't the squigglies that are in Moth Mama's drink?
Oh, were they?
Or is that just a term for fish?
I think it's a similar. Yeah, I think that's a term they use for fish. But the bugs in the drink were called something, and we'll have to pause, I think, and look it up.
Google pause. Google pause. Google pause.
Yeah, all right, so we have Googled it, and I'm glad you stuck with us while we did that. And but we did edit it out, I'm sure. And but they were called squigs, so they're very similar. But these are squigglies, which I assume are
bigger versions.
The word for fish.
Yes, Jonathan. I figure that is probably the case with the cutesy language. So yeah.
Well, as Cassian and Melshi are off to their next planet, let's head over to ours and. Let's head over to Ferrix. All right, here we are on Ferrix, and a very sad day, James. Oh, and one of your favourites, you've killed her off again claiming to like her.
I'm literally the angel of death, aren't I? So, oh, God. I've still got a theory. I reckon she's still alive. I reckon this. I reckon. Now, come on, hear me out.
She was put into a brick.
She's not. You've not seen her physically put in a brick yet.
Don't get technical with me.
You've seen her wrapped up.
We saw her float past.
Yeah, but she could be on a breather. They could have, remember the breather things they put in their mouth in the prequels?
Yeah, but they wouldn't do that to poor little B2EMO.
No. It's for the cause.
He'll understand. Let me hear your theory, James.
So the Empire is watching her like a hawk, right, 24-7, and everyone knows this pretty much now. They've got to know this, that everyone's watching her.
Yeah.
So they fake her death, right? Okay. And they take her out, and they're going to do a funeral. Now, this is a funeral where, in effect, I guess they cremate her and then mix her ashes with the brick dust to create the brick, right? So yeah. At some point,
put a name on it and put it in a wall.
Yeah.
In the wall, which I love because it's like I'd never heard of that. It's not taken from any real world thing, as far as I know. But great world building there.
I mean, it's close to human composting, which apparently California is like banging into. But anyway, whatever.
Oh, really? A composting?
Yeah. Where you can have a tree grow out of you.
Those carrots would taste really human-y.
They taste like granddad. but hear me out. So I reckon they're switching her out for someone else. They're going to they're going to put the ashes of someone else in a brick. And then Marva is going to be snuck away and is going to be working on breaking Bix out. There you are. I'm just saying it.
Interesting. I thought it was a bit out there, but until you see an actual dead body, say in The Walking Dead, they're not dead.
And her body's wrapped up, It's right. I mean, they've done their ceremonies. I reckon they got her out.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I think we must proceed, James, on the idea for the purposes of this podcast that she has died.
I know.
But I think that I will allow the door to be open. I'm not rejecting that.
I'm not going to reference it by name, but I was watching another series like this week, and people are struck by arrows and they're on death's door and then they miraculously come back and they're all right. That doesn't happen here.
In the next scene.
No, exactly. Gilroy hits somebody with one laser bolt and they're gone. Yeah, rings of power. Anyway.
The base, she basically had two tree trunks in her and the next moment she's up and about.
Bite down on this.
Spoilers.
Put some elven seeds in you, set fire to it and you'll be fine. She's not Rambo. Yeah. Anyway, gone off task. But anyway,
Stay on target.
We're too close. Stay on target.
Anyway, but yeah, I mean, all right. So, Mr. Gilroy, all right. Yeah, fair enough. Perfect plot line. She is dead, and it's as we mentioned earlier. This is the way you draw everyone into a Ferrix finale.
Yep.
So,
yeah. I had a question though, because it looked like that B2 was being used as a coffee table at one point.
Oh yeah, they were resting. It was resting.
Because they treat him like a member of the family, and then they just rest a coffee cup on top of him.
That was a reference back to her, because that was her space limsip. That was like her tea.
Oh yes, that's true.
How human. He was like a little kid who just lost his mum.
They kind of remind me of you know, very loyal pet dogs, pet, you know, pets.
Later on.
And I'm not really, you know, I'm in two minds about
robots,
two sentient human droids, because I liked in the original series, how in the original trilogy that they, you know, Han would reach over and just switch off C-3PO in the back. They weren't kind of treated with the, you know, they weren't droid rights like in Solo.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess my theory is if you don't erase the memory like Luke did with R2, he never erased the memory that, and it looks like they've never erased the memory of B2EMO. And over the years, it builds up and you have deeper and deeper connections. And, you know, you would hear R2 voice, you know, sympathy and sadness and happiness from him. So, although I didn't like the droid in Solo because it was too real world human, this pet, loyal pet like one kind of works really well.
Yeah, I mean, he's just from the offset, B2's been like very sort of cute and sort of like,
yeah, you know,
sort of like
a bit slow and old, which is kind of nice.
And he does, you know, he's always been in fear of being left behind and just wants to be involved and all the rest of it. So, and I just the camera play from this where it opens and it's from his POV,
that's super close up of the eye.
And then, how they manage to get emotion out of a metal box.
That's true.
And the way it's done.
Yeah.
And even I think later on when they're talking to him, his little green lights, sort of like, which I don't think we'd seen before, like just pop out. And it's almost like that's, I don't know, hope, or that's just a smile.
Well, that little green light going up and up and up. I'm like, that adorable, what's happening? But I'm like, no, that's his charging light.
No, shut up. It was on that
platform.
No, I know he's on the charger because he's told off for being sulky and he's on it all day.
But I don't think it was charging light on your iPhone.
Maybe I'm reading too much into B2, but I thought that was more like his happiness meter. I don't know.
Mm. It did seem like that. They did shoot it like that, but I think it was actually his charging light, basically. But you're right, they did focus on it to see that he was getting happier when what's-his-name said that he would stay the night. But I thought it was a great shot when Marva's fake body was being floated past.
She wasn't floating past. I watched that.
Oh, she was on a platform. She's
carried.
Wasn't she?
So they carry her, and then they put her, and it's almost like one of the loaders. Because again, we're on ferrix. Right. It's a very industrial sort of, like, you know. And it's kind of, and there was just little bits of sort of dried flowers and that tied around it. I thought it was kind of good.
But I love the shot from inside.
Yes. Yeah. Again, from B2's POV, almost as he's watching.
Ah, that's exactly right. That's what it was. Yeah. Well done.
Beloved guardian, be sort of like, you know. Escaping, I mean, taking off to be put in a brick, or escape, whichever you decide.
another thing I thought was great was the space cafe, and of course these things happen.
Yeah, go on then.
Yeah, go on. Yeah, that's good. Good. But we cut to the space cafe and it's Cinta and Dedra's spy that's there, and obviously they either pretending they don't know who each other are, or do you think it's coincidence, which I think is hilarious.
It's ridiculous. So there's a cafe set up directly opposite Marva's house for a start. Yeah. Like, okay. Yeah. Cinta gets a job slowly.
Movie's got a movie.
Huh?
Yeah. Movie's got a movie, so the cafe is set up across the street from Marva's house.
For convenience level. Yeah, okay, get it. But like, there's only one customer. And it's the guy Korv, the Imperial spy. Dangerous person.
He's sitting there all day, just staring.
Talking into his Apple phone or whatever he's doing. And he's not even quiet. He's like, all right, I want people on a front and back and want this, that, and the other. And you've got Korv, who's like Dedra's sort of man on the ground. He's the only customer, right? He's the only customer.
Sits there all day on his laptop.
Exactly. He's doing his Zoom meetings on his laptop.
Want another coffee? No. Just the one coffee.
Just the one coffee. And all he's doing
staring at the door.
He's only on Facebook all day anyway. And he's one of those lot. I can tell now. But and it's so funny. And so like, Cinta's smart, right? We know this, and she's a super observant. We're not going to say. Clearly, she must know who he is, right?
You would think some bells would go off.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's now, and he's asking questions. Ooh, it's like, and she's like, yeah. "Oh, I don't know anything." And the parent is just like, "It's funny, just the."
Well, she's too busy side-eyeing Marva to notice him side-eyeing Marva's face.
I don't, yeah,
because that's that shot where she's cleaning the tables, looking at the door.
Yeah, exactly. She's polishing like the dirty cups outside,
and he should be pulled up as well for not noticing her.
I know. I mean, yeah,
but maybe it's that whole kind of. Cold War thing in East Berlin where you kind of all the spies ignore each other and let them get on with their own job. But I think we just have to accept that they haven't noticed each other and it's just coincidental and saving on sets.
Yeah, saving on sets, yeah. Like, and travel time between sets, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so, yeah.
But I like it later on we go to... Dedra speaking to her man on the ground, and he's like, they want to have a funeral, but we're not going to have it. But she's like, allow the funeral, keep it small, limit the time, limit the numbers. We want to put them in a box and stand back and watch. So I think that's a good plan for the Empire to see if they can catch anyone.
Yeah, I mean, as we say, it's a big draw, isn't it? She's passed away, and they. You know, they know that he loves his mother. He's gone back once to try and convince her to leave when he, you know, when he got the money from the raid, and you know, and they know he came back then. Because also, I think if we just talk about Bix, because Bix is now in such a bad way.
Oh no, she's in such a bad way, isn't she?
Completely broken, and so you wonder. She's just giving up information left, right, and center. I think she is. So it's
And I'm not sure, but does she know what Luthen looks like? Did she ever meet Luthen? Was it always just on the radio?
Yeah, no, because we talk about it because her partner, who they tortured first, or interrogated, said
a nice little chat with.
Yeah, had a quiet little chat with the doctor. said that Bix, they had from him information that Bix had met him face to face six times. Remember, like, Dedra leans in.
Yeah.
It was like six times.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
So she knows what he looks like, but then she's given, has she got enough strength in her to lie? Because when they show her, you know, Anton Kriegler.
Well, it was an interesting point, and it's great that you bring that up, because at the end of the scene, as she's being threatened with the doctor again, the end of the scene is overlaid with Mothma's daughter chanting, yielding in acceptance, safe in the braid of the old ways, true and steady and braided in trust. So it's like that yielding in acceptance line, and you see her kind of sag, and I think she's kind of accepted her fate, and that there's nothing that can be done to save her, and she's just an open book now.
Yeah, I think that's a safe assumption. I just wonder if she has enough in her to try and misdirect and just say that Kriegler is Axis.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
just to misdirect.
And
them
I think
slightly.
That's the that was the only play. Then I think you're right. That was going through through her mind. But that's a nice little segue to get us back over to Coruscant. So let's. Jump in the starship, hit that hyperspace button, and let's go. All right, here we are on Coruscant, and we head over to Mothma's place. And we open with Vel coming for a visit with Mothma. But in the background, Leda, Mothma's daughter, is there with a bunch of her friends, and she's been caught up in the religion, and all those plaits that she has on her head is part of the religion. And it seems like if you're far away from from Chandrila, you kind of, they said that you embrace the traditions of the country. And now, and this puts Mothma in an interesting place, because obviously if she accepts the offer from from Davos, then it seems that her daughter might be okay with it.
Yeah. Phew, Mothma's off the hook.
Yeah. She's like,
I don't know. and it's an interesting situation because clearly, like, the daughter is, I mean, she's embracing the old ancient ways, but I think she's also, you know, rebelling against her mother as well, because she knows she's going to piss her mum off. But yeah,
but it's also
right,
the first thing an authoritarian regime would do is to cut the kids off from their family, and so maybe this is an empire thing to encourage the things. But I think you're right. I think it's just basically to piss off mum.
Yeah, yeah. But it's going to backfire when she's married off at the age of 14 to sort of gangster's son, and she's we'll see. I mean, and again, we just see the state. Mon Mothma is now she's. You know, she's one step behind Bix, the state she's in.
Yeah.
She's like...
Well, I think that she can see her fate. The clock is ticking, and it's not long before she's going to be in front of the doctor, because there's the line that she says, "I'm in so much trouble, Vel," which she admits it to Vel and to herself, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And she explains the full situation to Vel, and the money and the struggle And I think she's accepting the only possible way out is to do this deal with.
Well, Mothma was saying that Imperial her bank called and said Imperial inspectors might be taking a look into Chandralian accounts, and we're contacting clients to make sure that everything is in order.
Don't you love the IRS?
And there's 400,000 credits missing, and she looks to Vel and just says, "Here I am." Basically saying, like, this is the situation, I'm stuck and there's nothing I can do and there's no way out. But Vel obviously knows about the raid on Aldani because she was there, but Mothma doesn't know she was involved.
No, exactly.
And they have 80 million credits, and 400,000 isn't a lot out of that money. So, but I don't think Luther knows she's in so much trouble.
There's probably Imperial dye packs on it. They'll give her that money to go on. we've tracked these credits. There'll be that. You can guarantee they're tracking those credits probably or something.
Yeah,
that's a good point though. I hadn't thought of that.
But money is fungible. So they had 10 million already and then they get 80 million from somewhere else. They can use the original 10 million to give her 400,000. Okay. So I'm hoping that... Luther might help her out, but then that wouldn't be good for our story, because I think in the next episode it's all going to blow up, basically.
Maybe we have a wedding
next
week.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Maybe Gilroy's going to hold off and we don't have a space battle or any final escape. And next week is just a wedding, a 50-minute not-so-red wedding. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah,
like
just a nice
a regal,
kind of wrap-up wedding.
Fucking brilliant.
It's an extra
long episode, everyone. It's an hour and 40 minutes, and the whole thing is just a slow burn wedding.
Yeah, and just reciting Chandralian poetry.
Exactly.
In The Lord of the Rings. Skip, skip.
Skip, skip. Yeah, it's just a mess with us.
So she's in big trouble, basically, and she's starting to sweat, and all her accounts have been frozen. So I don't know how she's going to get out of it, basically.
Yeah, and it is tricky because I think, back to your point about like why can't Luther give him money, I'm sure he can launder money quite easily with all his skill set and all the rest of it. But it would take, I still think, for suddenly that money to suddenly appear back in the account, it takes, what's his name, Kay, or what's her banker friend? Basically, I think...
Tay.
Yeah, I think...
Tay.
Tay. It takes someone like Tay's skill, it has to come from that side. Yeah. So I think she... Yeah. The only way out, I think, is to marry off her daughter.
Yeah, so, no, I think so.
For two cows,
which is,
or whatever
is quite the quandary. But you know, this is what I love about this. I have no idea what's going to happen with them. I have no idea what's going to happen with Perrin. I'm sure there's going to be a big bust up on Ferrix and the power station. But I absolutely do not know how it's all going to end up. And the only person I think So I know that we'll survive as Mothma and Cassian, basically.
That is. Well, I mean, the safest thing is for us to theorize what is going to happen, and then you can guarantee
let's have our theories at the end. Let's say the opposite of what we want.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it, isn't it? So we play the opposite day game, like my kids do. That was interesting, but then let's move on. Can we talk about Cyril at this point and his phone call?
Let's jump in a cab and head over to Cyril's place.
So It's 3 a.m. and Cyril's tucked up in bed. Mummy's got her hair rollers in. And the vid phone goes, and it's Sergeant Mosk.
Oh, wasn't that classic? It was so good to see him again.
Oh, I say, hello, sir. Hello.
Hello, sir.
Oh, can't complain. I'm working the smelting mine or wherever.
And I love how he's just kind of upbeat about it. Or, hang on, they're just pouring a whole lot of molten metal. Just wait. She goes, yeah, not so bad here, sir.
It reminds me of Monty Python, you know, when they're on the crosses. cheer up. It's all right.
It's so bad. Nothing wrong with this. He's still on Morlana 1 and like, you know, we only get a short time to use this, so you'll pardon my brevity.
Oh, and I just love the bad quality of this retro vid call. Mm. It's like, you have to speak up, sir.
But I'd like to have a moment to try to theorize how these phone calls work, the space phone calls, because they're on different planets. Mm. And we know that the speed of light can only is a fixed thing, and there should be great delays between each one of them talking rather than talking in real time because they're on different planets.
Yes.
You know, but so
I've got a theory on
imagining
it.
Though. Yeah, go on, let's hear yours.
It's a TV show. There you go. Well, I just
that
need
would
to stop.
Explain
I need,
everything.
I need to stop you there, Jonathan, before we do 20 minutes on trying to work out sort of like.
Well,
science.
I'm going to put a quick one in here. Is
oh
there's,
God, he's done his fucking research.
There is some kind of time spatial shifting that happens with the calls, where the signal in the call goes to a through the space time continuum and allows. I think you're right. It's just a TV show.
It's just
we
a
have
TV
to accept
show.
These.
Or we can also accept that they are like, there's the whole point of this. This is a million miles or a gabillion miles away from what other things are happening and stuff. So maybe that, you know, maybe these planets are in the same sector and they're close enough. And I don't know.
But even a call to the moon takes a long time.
Oh,
there's a cause, you know.
It's a TV.
All right, so it's a TV show and
everybody,
these calls are normal.
It's not real.
All right, fine.
All right. But we do love it. Anyway, yes. Yeah. But can we just point out that I loved seeing like Cyril's mum like in you know, just to see her not.
Yeah, a little bit disheveled, wasn't she?
She was at 3 a.m. Yeah. But she's still the little bitch who stands at the back and just earwigs the whole thing and just still sticks the boot in. So.
And the guy, he's just like Sergeant Mosk is still sort of apologies to the family, you know, and he's just like there and he's in the worst place ever, you know. He's in a, you know, a slave labor metal place, you know, so he's like, yeah, not so bad, sir.
Can't complain.
It was very funny. But so then Sergeant Mosk tells Cyril that Cassian's mother has died, and Cyril sees his opportunity.
Oh.
And waits till his mum leaves and then just opens up her safe and steals all the credits.
But I love the fact that he obviously gets immaculately dressed, goes out to work and hides around the corner like a teenager and then goes back. But I love it. And he takes the creds. He doesn't nick all her jewellery. I'd have fucking taken that
out.
Take it all.
But how psychotic is he that he's like he's so desperate to clear his name and get it back in favor and get involved again that he's just leaving his job with no warning and jumping on a transport and heading to Ferrix. I don't know what he's going to do there, but he's going to do something.
Yeah, exactly. He's desperate to prove himself to Dedra, isn't he?
So. Yeah. His insanity amuses me.
he's pretty unhinged. It's great. So, I think he's going to have to play a part. I mean, I think he's going to be like a clever plot foil of something's going to go wrong next week, where he's going to like again be over keen to impress and like cause issues or something. And we shall see. Or maybe not next week. Next week is the wedding, as we know now.
Yeah, so. Next week is a wedding. Yeah. So there might not be time for an exciting show.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
All right, here we go. Let's jump into our starship again, and we're going to head to Segre Milo.
Oh, yes.
All right, here we are back on Segre Milo, and we're at Saw's encampment.
Yeah, and Luthen sort of like comes in, and he's here to obviously to warn Saw of what's coming. But like, I thought it's kind of interesting how Saw's changed a bit. So first of all, like, we've got the heightened security, like they're checking, you know, they're patting him down.
He's in a bad mood.
He's in a bad mood. But he's also.
But can I just say how cool Two Tubes is?
Oh, he's brilliant, isn't he? I mean, so I went on the Wikipedia about him. I'm not going to go into it. I deliberately read it, but did not type right. I got some vague stuff if I remember it.
But he's a very cool character. He's another one of those characters that, like, Boba Fett that can just stand there and you just want to know, you know, everything about him. Yeah. And the other thing I like is what they do here in Andor rather than Mandalorian and some of the others one is that all the aliens generally are subtitled and they speak in, like, Two Tubes were speaking Tognath, but they subtitled him in English, which is really cool.
Yeah, and so put it into... Yeah, to bring it back to us so we can actually understand him. But but I also thought Saw was like all of a sudden he's super keen. I'm in. I'll work with Krieger. It's never really explained why he's the sudden rapid change of mind, right?
I think he just wants the equipment.
Desperate for the parts. Yeah, maybe. Oh yeah, because he also says like, and I'll take anything that, you know, we can get from the base as well, from the power station and stuff. So yeah, so maybe he's
thinks it's a low risk, high reward thing, but he just realizes that he was being a bit of a bitch, not wanting to play with everyone else.
Yeah.
And so there he's actually said it was actually quite a good deal for him.
Yeah. And he realizes now that, you know, he's gonna do it. But then, and so he's super keen now and he's like, okay, right. I'll take the deal. And it's like, why would you now decide that? And I guess as the theory is, okay, well, it's, you know, as you mentioned, it's like it's low risk, high reward. And he's like, oh, and I'll take all the bits that are on the table, and I'll also like whatever's left at the power station, I'll take that as well, because clearly he's now like scrambling. And then Luthen gambles big time here, and he gambles on Saw being smart and in for the long game. And he tells him that it's a trap.
It's a trap!
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then then the paranoia really kicks in. And
that's not unusual with Saw, because he's paranoid even when everything's going great.
Yeah, exactly. And when you've been told
he's
in a bad
dinner, what do you mean? What do you mean here's my dinner? Where did this dinner come from?
You taste it for me now. But it's that, if you're ISB or you have somebody inside in the ISB, then he pauses and he looks around the room, then you have somebody here as well. And then good old Luthen throws two tubes to the wolves. He's like, oh, it's my man Two Tubes over there. He's like, what? It's not. And it's like,
He tells me every two tubes, come on, God damn it. I thought we were buds.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just a great ploy to bring them in and to drop Saw's guard. And he takes the gun and puts it to his chin and stuff. And this is a really good way to obviously get his point across, but also to demonstrate this is how the ISB would be. It's like if you alert them, they're going to be they're going to be on high alert now. Mm. And so...
And it's a question of whether what's the value of the 50
well,
men.
30 men now. Or I don't know why it drops
30
it.
Men now.
Yeah, it's 30 men plus Krieger.
Plus the leader, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, are they worth, you know, the mole they have in the ISB that's taken them 6 years to put in place?
Exactly. And I think there was the gamble, and it's like, you know, and Luthen's gambling on Saw being the smart man here. And then you know, you get the great exchange, and Saw looks at him for the greater good, call it what you want, And he goes, let's call it war. And I'm like, fucking
It, isn't it?
That's it. And then I'm like, so is that the official start of the war? Being at war with the Empire?
I mean, yeah, that's that is, yeah, that's right.
That's the
is that the official declaration of war of the rebellion? Rebellion. But I like how he's like, how do I know you're not going to throw me under the bus? Mm. And he's like, well, because he does. Anton Krieger hasn't seen his face.
Yes.
And whereas Luthen interacting with Saw directly, person to person, saying who he is and what his role is in it, that shows Saw how much he trusts him and how much he's putting himself in his hands. Yeah. And so to show that they're the inner circle and they are not expendable.
And also how valuable Saw is, I think, to Luthen. I think it's he like reveres him and has him up there and feels that he is a he should be
a necessary part.
He's a necessary cog in the rebellion, and he, and that's which will play to any sort of like like just fanaticals like ego as well. It's like so he plays off him, and it's so they're in, and they accept.
Yep, they're in
that. They're going to have to.
But I wonder. Well, we'll get that to the end because we'll have predictions at the end because I have some theories on how things will go.
Well, no, hold on. Sorry, let's just on that. So, hold on a minute. So, obviously, he's warned Saw that it's a trap.
And they both agreed to sacrifice Anton Krieger and his men.
So, therefore, we're not going to see Saw go into battle to save Krieger. So, all
right, so I'll give you my theory is that at some point they're going to go, fuck this, we're not going to sacrifice these guys. Exactly. We're going to go into open war, no more hiding, no more mucking around. We are now going to be in open rebellion. And they're going to fly in and I hope we get to see with because we've seen all those old ships. X-wings.
Yes.
What were those called? Yeah, the precursor to the X-wings. I can't remember what they're called now.
K-95s or something you call them. I can't remember. Yeah. We have to look it up again.
We'll call them the X-wings for now. Yeah. But we've seen those X-wings a couple of times and we must
just sitting there on the ground
hoping we see them in battles. Yeah.
You got Yeah, they've got to have some action soon and stuff. So yeah, I think you're right. I think they'll start to see like Krieger's like just men being cut down and stuff, and then it'll be we can't.
And seeing as Luthen is such a great pilot as well, I'm hopeful we'll see him and his ship in battle as well.
Come on, let's move on.
Yeah, I think we're going to be next week will be a ground war on Ferrix and an air battle over the power station. Which is what I'm hoping for, which would be a great finale to the series. But we shall see.
Or it a wedding.
Could be the wedding.
Could be a wedding. Yeah. But anyway, let's discuss Luthen leaving Segro Milo airspace, shall we?
Yes. We are in atmosphere, in the edge of atmosphere in space, and finally we get to see a giant Star Destroyer emerging from the bottom of the screen with a small ship in the foreground. Finally we get to see that classic Star Wars opening.
Yeah, and I love that sort of standoff where it's got the little ship and the big ship, and apparently that's it's an Arresta cruiser, isn't it? Like that's the name of it.
Yes.
It
is a Cantwell class Arresta cruiser, and it's named after Colin Cantwell, who did a lot of the early ship design. So he was Ralph McQuarrie did a lot of the visuals, but Colin Cantwell did the ship design. So it was an Arresta cruiser. Of the Cantwell class.
Oh, that's a nice touch. I like that. Good. Those models they made were incredible. The old ones when they just made from all little bits of old Airfix models and whatever they just glued together.
Exactly.
Now that 3D rendering sort of like rubbish.
And it's a massive ship, and it looked like a Star Destroyer. It was a small one, but it had like three dishes on it, and I think two were for listening, and then one at the front was a tractor beam. So
which is, as we now know, is a terrible design fault. But anyway.
Well, if you happen to have all the secret weaponry that Steve Barr didn't seem to want Luthen to have.
He said, Steve... But I love it. Luthen is basically 007 at this point, isn't it? It's like brilliant.
But that's fantastic. Yeah, exactly. This is his Aston Martin. He's driving
this DB5 in space. It's a beautiful piece of technology. The old Fondor is like pretty special.
But I love how he's talking to...
oh, yes, all in code. He's talking to Claire... There's many players on the board, or was it? No, there's many.
Yeah.
There's
multiple buyers.
It's a crowded market.
Yeah. And then he just cuts off, and I'm like, I wasn't expecting this at all. And then you cut to that classic scene of him coming out, and the big spaceship just revealing itself. But I loved that they were on the edge of space, so you had the
blues and the blacks. Yeah. Really, really nicely done. That's and I love the call out where he turns to the Fondor droid and he's like, "Yeah, give me a code.
Yeah.
Give me a code." And of course,
exactly.
Of course, he wants
an Alderaan one.
Yeah, and of course he wants an Alderaan code. It's like, oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
So it's just a really nice touch and stuff. And the classic slightly awkward posh voice as he's stalling. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. The old delaying tactics. Oh, there's pirates in the area.
Thank you for warning me.
Yeah. Thank you for warning me. I'm on your side.
Yeah,
and then the guy's like, no. Sorry, dude. We're still coming over. But he was a classic Imperial officer and captain of the ship, and his number one says, "Should we cancel the boarding?" And he goes, "That's so." And he goes, "No, we could use the practice," which I thought was great. But then also there was that shot where you see the stormtroopers in the background, and I'm just watching it. I'm like, "Stormtroopers!"
They're stood in the background, and then it's like, and that classic. It's like they're engaging the tractor beam, so you have to see the two dudes in the black with the big black helmets on, because they clearly only work beams of different types, don't they? They work just the beam crew, the big helmets and stuff. So
with those ridiculous, impractical helmets.
But I
also love that they're in the sunken control area. I always think that's a classic Imperial design.
With no safety rails. So like people will be falling in there when they come into the room.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe you get hit by a piece of from some incoming fire, and suddenly you're just falling down 6 feet onto the other people.
Clattering on someone.
Should we talk about how things went?
Let's talk about the strategy for me.
So they hit him with a tractor beam.
Yeah, so they hit with a tractor beam on, was it level two or whatever?
Level
beam.
Two.
And then he starts messing with his engines, doesn't he? So he starts like...
Well, what I thought happened was he starts charging the countermeasure, and the countermeasure was basically some shrapnel that was fired. But they could fire, so they're solid objects, as we said before. And he's like, what level are we up the tractor beam? And he's at level two. And then he starts accelerating away.
Exactly, which triggers
and
them
then
to
the
take
captain
it up to five. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And so not only do you have the flechettes being fired at, but with the tractor beam, it must exponentially increase the speed
the
and
velocity
damage.
That they hit. They basically hit terminal velocity in the vacuum very quickly.
Seconds.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's perfect.
And it just shreds that dish, doesn't it?
Yeah. And it's like, and was it they said we've lost tractor beam or something? And
yeah.
It was like, really?
Really? Where's my air wing?
Oh,
but I love how he just goes, no.
Yeah.
When he sees his dish just getting destroyed.
And I love the fact you see TIE fighters and a TIE bomber. Not that it lasted very long.
The TIE bomber
classic. Comes out, and I was like, I'm not sure exactly what TIE bomber.
But then we have super calm Luthen just flying beautifully, arcs around, takes out the TIE bomber, and then James.
Oh, you let me do it.
The scene that I've been hinting at all this time.
I just love that. So the classics of the Fondors whipping off, and the wings drop into, I guess, like attack formation. They come round. And then the sides open, and I thought at this point they're like cannons coming out of the side.
Yeah.
And they come out, and then you've got we drop back into the cockpit, and we see his targeting system or whatever, or it's the charging system, and then ding, comes online basically. And then he's just like fires up. freaking laser beams as he barrel rolls and cuts through them, which was incredible.
Yeah, he just does a barrel roll and you've got a spaceship lightsabers.
But I have a few questions here.
Yes.
So I'm guessing, right, that they must be a charge and like a one-shot thing. You can't just have those things going all the time. Because if you did, I'd have been turning around and going back at that ship and cut it in half.
Exactly.
Like, you know, I'd go through that like Swiss cheese just coming into it. Just
but that was that scene where he turns around, that shot where he turns around
and comes
flying in over the bridge. And I was like straight back into Battlefront 2, especially in the VR headset. It was such a moment I used to love doing. Was flying over this.
Just coming in close and whipping over the bridges and stuff and all that. But I mean, what sort of range do you think those beams have got?
Well, I think it's close quarters, and I think they must fall off, but maybe they don't. I mean, they're just laser beamed straight out into space. I imagine their effectiveness falls off at some point. It's just like a fire hose, and he just does that barrel roll and slices them to pieces.
Yeah.
But again, it was lovely to see TIE fighters in the air.
Yeah, for 30 seconds before they're gone.
But
and then we cut back to the Star Destroyer's commander and his face.
Yeah.
And then Luthen jumps to light speed. And it's just like...
Yeah, a glorious escape into hyperspace.
And he's like, whoop, and he's gone.
And he's gone. Yeah, but now his ship would have been pinged. His ship is now on the Empire's radar. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, I suppose. Yes. He'll have to get in one of those X-Wings, won't he?
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, good point then. Yeah, I suppose, I mean, even by changing the landing codes, whatever you call it, the transponder codes or whatever, it's quite a specific sort of ship, isn't it? So he's going to have to take it in for some more upgrades, I think, is what you have to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Take it around.
A fresh paint job.
They'll never know.
All right, and our final destination, we are back on Niarmos. And I thought it was very unlikely, but very funny that his kit was still in the above the shower with all the cash and everything in it, and those two aliens in bed sleeping as he's creeping in and out. I mean, it's so unlikely, but it'll definitely make for a more fun show. And so I will definitely allow that one.
Yeah, and he didn't murder them, which he could have quite easily murdered them. He could murder them in the sleep.
He could have completed the set.
He could have completed the set of every planet I've been to. I've taken somebody down. But
I thought it was cool that in the close-up of the box, and there were credits and two blasters and also Nemex's manifesto was in there.
Of course.
That's what
course.
That was, yeah.
Ah, yes. So he did that. That's good.
I do miss him. Oh. See, even like that's how good the writing is in this is like we only knew him for a couple of episodes, but at the end they're still kind of, you know, I have pain in my heart at his loss, James.
I know, you should see a counsellor, I know, Jonathan.
I should do.
It's harsh. I mean, it is good. I mean, yeah, you're right, there are other shows that you're watching, it's like somebody dies halfway through the show, and like, meh, okay, and you forget about them. Because like, this one is clever and pulls you back in, like, every now and then to people to remind you
just how little many touches
people
and little
Gilroy
reminders.
Has killed.
But then later on in the episode, we see Cassian making a call on the space payphones back to Ferrix to get a message to his mum, and the guy starts calling him Cassian. Like, surely you must know that. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, no names. Okay, Cassian. I'm like,
he says no names. He says no names, and they continue to call each other by his name.
And of course, the Dedra has her requisitioning for a listening post. Anything coming in and out, so they know he's in contact now, and they know he knows that his mother is dead.
Yeah, and
or is she?
Exactly. Well, she's at the wedding next week, so
that's true. She has to make the wedding. But I thought it was a really, really great callback. Well, not a callback, but a reference to a to a perfectly cloudy off-season day at a beach resort where it's a bit windy and not really that nice and it's deserted, you know.
And I think, and I know
concrete
this is
everywhere.
I think this is all filmed in north of England stuff, so I'm guessing that's probably Blackpool or something. Yeah. I don't know, maybe. It had that feel to it. Can I just have a big shout out to Melshi's shirt?
I didn't notice it.
That was classic. I just like real sort of Latino, so kind of sort of. I thought it was great, that sort of shirt.
A little bit flamboyant, was it?
A little bit flamboyant, and it's. But their exchange there is great. After he gets off the phone, he tells him that everything's okay, and then Melshi's, and he's like, "How many?"
He's seeing all this space. Yeah.
Yeah, he's seeing all this space, and then he's like, "How many do you think got out?" And Andor's response is not enough.
Like, this point, and I really reckon it is just those two, and I think
floating. Does he come floating past at this point? Yeah. Guys.
He comes past on a jet ski. Yo. Kino.
Eastbound and down start. He just comes ripping by.
Pulls up. All right, lads, jump on. Got a couple.
You'll never fucking guess what, lads. sorry, it's a break from the mood there. Sorry.
But it was terribly sad. And to see him seeing his mum has died and realizing he wasn't there and all the regret and the loneliness and what now? And I know that he knows it would be a huge mistake to go back, but
he can't help himself.
And as a string quartet of the Andor theme comes in, which I thought was gorgeous as well.
And we have that, and he's looking out to, as you said, like the windswept sort of like overcast day, and we have that classic sort of as Spielberg calls like God light, as the sun is just cracking through in shafts of light through the clouds, and obviously this is to reference Marva and her passing and all the rest of it.
But I also thought it was a reference to the final scene of Rogue One.
When they sit on the shoreline, it's very similar, waiting for the blast to hit them, like the pair of them sitting there. Don't ruin it, Jonathan. Don't ruin it for everyone.
Sorry.
Can we just jump back to Melshi a second? Because that exchange between the two of them, and he's like, and he wants to spread the word. He's like, he wants... Yeah. Because somebody has to know what they're doing. Word has to get out. And so he hands him the gun, and they go off, and that's such a Miami Vice moment. He's got his silk shirt on and he hands him his pistol. But I think that's, he's going to spread the word and try and drum up resistance on as many worlds as he can, at least until he gets to Scarif and gets killed, of course. But he'll do his part. And I thought that was good as well. It's like a nice sort of,
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's head over to the notes. Do you have any notes, James?
Just the how desperate and careless Vel is getting at times. Like when she goes into Luthen's shop and Claire's brilliant. We have rules for a reason. And she's basically just putting her in her place. And she's like, I gave him Aldani. What have you done?
But it seems that it's almost playing to her character of the rich girl on the run to piss off her parents, and she wants all credit and wants to be involved in everything.
Well,
and
I think
doesn't
she's
know
also a liability. I mean, like Luthen,
yeah,
and
the coming one,
so cautious and so good,
And Claire is really the one that's keeping a lid on all
everything.
The procedures
she's,
and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
She, at this point, she's trying to hold Luthen back because he's like he's about to go to Ferrix as well. So that was just one of the things I had. And then my other thing is like, can we put a wager on who's going to die next week? I reckon Luthen. I really do genuinely think.
Well. Well, I don't think he'll survive the series, and I hope that he doesn't die next week, but because we don't see him in the future. But I really hope he doesn't doesn't leave us for next season, because it would be almost like Westworld when we lost Anthony Hopkins after season one. Yeah. It really wasn't quite the same.
We'll have to dig into Stellan Skarsgård's contract and see if he signed for two seasons or not.
Exactly. But it wouldn't surprise me if Vel goes. I have to say
at this point, and I'm going to ruin it now. Yeah. Probably She Will Survive to the End now. She's my least favorite, I think, now.
Vel,
I don't know.
Well, I think she's making silly mistakes, starting to make silly mistakes, and allowing her ego to get involved in it, and is making mistakes because she wants to be more involved and get more attention. So I keep coming back to wondering what her relationship with Luthen is, because it seems it's a little bit more than just, you know, just a professional. There seems to have some personal relationship going.
Yeah, back. I mean, maybe it's because she's so close to Mothma, and Mothma's been so tied in with Luthen for so long. He's probably seen Vel grow up for the last 10. Well, he said he's been in for 15 years, so he's probably seen her since she was a child.
Mm. But that's great. So let's head over to the news section. And there was some news this week. Disney is showing Andor on ABC, FX, and Hulu over Thanksgiving.
Oh, what? Well, the first episode?
No, only the first two episodes, which I thought was really interesting.
Can I be cynical here? Can I be cynical?
Yes.
Disney are about to do a price hike on Disney Plus in the US. And that is ABC, FX, and Hulu, which is the bundle. So. And it's Thanksgiving again, so they're going to hook people in, and then I think they're doing a deal over Thanksgiving. So, like, if you are in the US and your Disney Plus subscription is about to end, I would look into that now. I'd look into re-upping it now, because I think it's about, don't quote me, but I think it's about $20, $30 off for the year if you do it.
Oh, right.
I'm guessing it's going to be like a Black Friday kind of deal.
But I think it's a really good move from them. Absolutely. And I think it's a sign of the success of the show.
For sure.
And the building success of it, you know. Yeah. Now that Rings of Power and the Game of Thrones show, House of the Dragon, is over, I really think that there's starting to be, and just anecdotally, I know a whole lot of people have jumped on to Andor now that those two are over, and maybe they're seeing the numbers are up and they're going to throw some support behind it.
Well, it's also very, very clever, because obviously Disney owns, like, you know, these regular networks and stuff, so they have a platform to do that. So, like, you're going to reach so many people, especially on Thanksgiving. And you might hook them in for a subscription. I mean, because how many of us have subscribed to one of these many streaming things just for one show? And maybe they feel strongly that Andor could be that.
Well, I hope so, because I think it's a great show and more people should watch it.
Yeah.
But I must say, you know, I have my criticism of Disney, but it is a good subscription.
All too easy.
There's tons to watch, and there's loads on there, and you know, all the Star Wars stuff, all the Marvel stuff. And during the pandemic, I did a full Marvel rewatch from beginning to end, which was fantastic.
And on the other side,
Iron Man 2 with Mickey Rourke.
Hey, leave Mickey out of this. It's a great platform. I mean, I have two daughters, and it's like a different, you know, a teen and younger, and it's great. There's plenty for all the family.
All the family.
We just done a Disney ad, haven't we? I think we have. Anyway.
Yeah, we are not budget Disney. Checks will not be on it.
Yeah, generally. Yeah. And I know you didn't like it, but She-Hulk's quite funny anyway. But anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure it's funny, and it's definitely got its audience. But yeah, no, it wasn't my thing.
Okay. But anyway, but that is great news to know that Andor's going to be on, like, regular TV the first couple of episodes. Who knows? They might all start listening to us, Jonathan. We might have millions.
You never know, James. Hello, all those listeners that have come over and saw the ABC show. But yeah, no, just the jump in audience, and I can't actually. It hasn't been a Star Wars show on, you know, broadcast TV at all, has it?
I think we joke about it, but I think it's that Christmas special from the Christmas special, 78 or whatever it was.
But I'm sure ABC will have, you know, commercials promoting it, and will really, like, the numbers will have to jump.
Yeah, they will. They definitely will. I mean, it's kind of...
Yeah. Well, anyway, so any support of a show like Andor, I am fully behind.
Yes.
All right, let's head to Only in Star Wars. Right, Only in Star Wars, James. Did you have any Only in Star Wars moments that you noticed?
I just really thought the Narkeenan trap was very Star Wars-y because it reminded me of Ewoks, of their like net traps, and it because it wasn't a perfect thing. It was just this cobbled together, you know, sort of like comes out and grabs them and stuff. I thought that was kind of thing.
And it was so sticky and uncomfortable, and you just knew that there was no getting out of it.
But I mean, just in general, those two characters were so Star Wars-y to me. Like the character design and the voices and just everything
and
about
the sense
them.
Of humor that they had as
well. And they just, to me, actually, I forgot to mention earlier, this reminded me of the Gamorrean guards a bit as well, because they're like,
the
same sort of portly shape, and they plod around and
that's true,
and they're like that, and they're gonna. So I would, they're my only in Star Wars for this week, is that whole setup.
Yeah, good.
And you?
My one was the Blue Pelicans.
Where is it? That's got to be on the Space Miami planet, is it?
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, they come zooming in, and basically there's some pelicans they've dipped in some blue paint, and suddenly you've got some space pelicans.
All right, everyone, before you all get upset, they did not dip them in paint. They did it in post.
We're
back to the
an effect.
Yeah, what were the puffin? What were the creatures in?
Oh, the Korgs, Porgs.
Yeah, the Porgs.
Oh God, they were annoying.
Yeah.
My favourite moment in the sequels was when Chewbacca was eating one of those.
He's cooking it on the spit. Because that was the whole thing, wasn't it? That island, they just gave up trying to clear them off it, and they just did it.
Yeah.
Just painted out every puffin into one of those.
Yeah, right. Oh, is that true?
It wasn't intentional. They just had no way. Like every morning they come in and they try and clear set, things would just come in. So they just like, oh, we're just
that's funny.
Blue Pelicans, very good. Good spot. How many times you watch it to spot that?
this time I only watched it two times, I believe.
I think I was only two this week. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's funny. I take it in when we do these. You really, especially on the second viewing, you pay a lot of attention to to everything. And I love it. I really look forward to every Wednesday. And we have to watch this, James. Unfortunately, we're being forced to watch.
Tell my wife
because we have to podcast about it.
My wife's angrily texting me at the moment to deal with a sick child, and I'm working, darling.
Well, this is Star Wars, and it's far more important.
It is. This is real life.
Well, saying that, let's head over to the listener feedback section.
Which is very important.
All wings reporting.
Red 10 standing by.
Red 7 standing by.
Red 3 standing by.
Red 6 standing by.
Red 9 standing by.
Okay, welcome back. We had a lot of amazing feedback again, so thank you very much. And if you want to send your comments in, you can send it to the Podcastica Facebook page or into talk@podcastica.com. And yeah, join the Podcastica page. It's really fun. We always get a lot of banter around the Star Wars question of the week. You guys are very, very funny. And lots of discussion about all your favorite shows that are on Podcastica. And a lot of your hosts are there for you to interact with.
And with one episode to go, it's time to get that voicemail in. You will send a voicemail in. It's my Jedi mind trick. It's a bit rubbish, though, isn't it? It's without the hand things. We need to do video, more video. So I just
sprung that line on Jones, but he did deliver it.
Well, I was in two minds of like trying to do a Yoda voice, and I just I'm not going to do that.
You will do a Jedi. You will send a voicemail.
Oh no, what would it be?
Voicemail. You will send in.
Help you again. Yes.
Oh,
you will send
hours.
A voicemail in.
That was my Obi-Wan.
Oh my God,
sorry, everybody.
Fuck. Oh God, it's hilarious. I'm trying to muster a Qui-Gon Jinn now, but no, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Just send us a voicemail for Christ's sake next week, thank you. And you can go to podcastica.com. And then go to the contact page, hit the record voice message tab on the right, or record one on your phone, or email it to talk@podcastica.com. I hate it when you throw Sorry, things goodbye. At me last minute like that, you little fuck. Anyway. All right, let's move on to some letters now. God, we
gotta, well, you've got to read the show sheet before we go. I believe you did.
I did, actually. But that was the one line I didn't say. I read all the letters. Anyway.
It was a listeners, just to fill you in, we do this on Zoom as well, and we're coming to that, and James just paused in his eyes. What the hell have you done with me? But you handled it quite well, James.
Yeah, I was trying. How do I do Jedi mind trick?
You will send a voicemail.
Look, you've been practicing for days because you wrote the damn sheet. Anyway, moving on to letters now, Jonathan. We're going to do this. All right, Russell Piner. That escape by Lutheran was just incredible. He was so composed, and the great tricks on board the Fonda were very cool. Loved the countermeasures. The look on the smug Imperial officer's face was priceless. I had to watch that scene about four times in a row. I was smiling the whole time. That's how you do a standoff in space, Ryan Johnson. There you go, Russell. That's why you're top of the list.
Ryan Johnson, you shitbag.
Kristen.
But that's right. I thought that was a really, yes. Great that scene. Loved it.
Yeah. I mean, we could have done with some bombs. Oh, no, let's not start the bomb thing. Space bombs. Anyway, Kristen Hellberg. Hi, Kristen.
My turn. Kristen Hauberg, Luthen turned his ship into a lightsaber. That was really a joy to watch. I know you guys love Cyril, but he is the worst. Oh. He is such a who cares character for me. If you were to lift him out of the story, there's just not a lot that would change, and there would be more time for Cass and friends. Where is my Kino Loy? Here's hoping we get him one more time. Marva's death is about to fuel our finale. I expect everyone to attend and act exactly the way we expect them to act. Here's to it. Unbelievable show. Best show on TV. Can't wait to rewatch as soon as it's over and look for Easter eggs. Thanks for the podcast, gents. You two are so fun to listen to in the car, and my kids love you too. Isn't that sweet? Heart. Hello, kids in the car. Hope you're enjoying the show.
Sorry for swearing.
All systems have been alerted to your presence, sir.
And
Adam Buckley. Hey, guys, it's Adam from Sydney for another fucking Aussie, as James called me. Did I?
He was the voicemail guy. You extended the voicemail, and you're like, oh, another fucking Aussie.
I mean it affectionately, Adam. Like, I've known Jonathan for many years. Anyway, sorry. How badass was Stellan Skarsgård as Luthen Rail this week? Yeah. I wouldn't want to back him into a corner. Also,
I may have to read the end of this. This is an Australian expression. Okay. Also, far out, the tension is killing me with Andor, and everyone and their monkey is planning on going after him at his mother's funeral. So it's a little translation of Australian there.
Yeah, I refer back to another fucking Aussie. All right, Adam. If you write in English, if you're writing in. Jesus Christ. Anyway. Right.
All right, Gary J. Hewitt. Did Darth Maul's lightsaber have sex with a spacecraft?
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Where's his legs?
This episode was full of teams finally banding together, putting their trust in each other, and new families formed. Andor and Melshi working together. Saw and Luthen learned to trust each other, as did Vel and Markey. B2MO found a new owner in Brasso. And as Andor and Ferrix lost their mother figure, Cyril Khan and Leda Mothma seemed to be distancing themselves more and more from their mum. True.
Yeah. Steve Barr. Years ago, Luthen faced a decision. Either fully fund the rebellion with his piles of credits or spend it on a fancy ship. Very good, Steve.
I think Steve really resents Luthen's Aston Martin, I think.
He's just jealous. He's just jealous of it, isn't he? I mean, go on then.
And Ben Stone. Strange episode. Not sure why. It took me two viewings to take it in and still seems a bit odd. Thought the Narkeenan aliens were a bit odd. Seemed something more like something from the Dark Crystal. Yeah. Love Saw. So well acted. I was hoping Marva would go out with a bang. And so definitely a bit deflated by that. Great scene in the Fondor. Sensational effects. What was the weapon Luthen had taken off him when meeting with Saw? Looked like a lightsaber. And there's been a bit of discussion of this online, whether Luthen is a secret Jedi. But
isn't it?
I thought it was just a billy club, just a truncheon.
If you go back to the beginning when we first see him, what episode one or two, when again, like when he's getting on the ship or whatever, it's basically it's an extending cane, so it will extend.
It's an extended cane.
Yeah, but I do think isn't it like a sword as well? It's not a lightsaber. It's not a lightsaber, but I think it has a blade in it. But I think it's
it's a retractable cane. We did see that earlier. Retractable cane. Yeah, but it is shaped. The bottom half of it is shaped like an old school English truncheon that the police used to use.
Yeah, Billy Cup. Yeah, it could be. But we'll dig into that then.
But I don't think he's a secret Jedi, do you?
I don't think so. I mean, I think Tony Gilroy has done such a brilliant job, and the whole thing of this was to keep it out of the Jedi world.
Yeah,
just to keep it out. So I think it would be a little bit lame at this, you know, if suddenly next week Luthen pulls a lightsaber. I mean, admittedly, we'll both be like, oh my fucking god,
actually it'd be fucking awesome. Yeah, but a little out of context.
It would be out of context from it. So yeah. I don't think he is a Jedi. I think it's a nice misdirect to have that, I think, and that's all it is, I'd say.
But it was interesting that they brought attention to it. So I think we can leave it at that, and we may see it again.
See how wrong we are next week.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. That was another great episode and a great podcast. Thank you, James.
Yeah, no, thank you, Jonathan. Thank you. And if you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all of our contact information at podcastica.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the other shows. There's some pretty good stuff.
And if you're listening to this on House Podcastica, but you're not interested in the other shows on there, we also have a podcast just for Star Wars shows, which you can also find at podcastica.com or search for the Star Wars TV cast on your podcast app.
And don't forget to rate and review and tell all your friends about us. I mean, come on, it's one to go.
Just scroll down and hit those 5 stars.
Do that. And then all tell everyone to watch it on ABC. And then, like,
yeah. And welcome to all the ABC watchers. Yes. All right, that's our show.
All right, thanks for listening. I'm James.
And I'm Jonathan. And may the Force be with you.
You got through? It's okay?
Yeah. Everything okay?
All this space. Fresh air. Like a dream, right? How many do you think made it? How many of us made it out alive?
Not enough.
What if it's just us? What if we're the only ones? Somebody's got to tell people what's happening down there. We need to split up. double our chances. One of us has to make it. People have to know what's going on. I know. Take this. People have to know about this.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.